This morning, the scripture reading will be from Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 through 6. And Pharisees came up to him and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause?" He answered, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate.'" You may be seated.
Great to have you with us this Lord's Day morning. We'll make a few announcements about next Sunday and about the past. We have been having two services, I think, since about July, and so we expressed appreciation this morning at the 8:30 for some of that have made extra contributions to make that happen during that service, and I want to say a little bit about that in this service as well. First of all, I appreciate the men who have had to do more. One specifically, Brian Dawson, appreciate him kind of taking over the getting men to help and really finding everybody, and so appreciate him stepping up and doing that. Appreciate the guys who've had to do more of the ushering duties and some of those doing that almost every week. And our song leaders, at the 8:30 service, Jeff's had to do it most all of the sessions. Austin's done some, but really appreciate him making that sacrifice and doing that. And in our 10:30, our song leaders have had to do more as well. So we've had a lot of men who have done more because of the two services, and we appreciate them very much. Also, I want to say thanks to Michael. Michael's come to both services throughout the entire time and appreciate him. And Michael, there's somebody else that you and I ought to thank, and that is, really, we get to come to services, but we leave behind the kids and our wives, who have to get ready the kids on Sunday morning and get them to church, and that's a challenge. So we have a little token of our appreciation to them for the 9 months plus of dealing with Sunday mornings without us. And so we have some flowers for them as a way of appreciating them, because the 8:30 service did put a hindrance upon us being able to be there and help. And now maybe we won't hinder them too much next week by being there. Because sometimes it goes smoother when Dad's not there. But we do appreciate them for the sacrifices they made over this time as well. I want to say another thing about the 8:30 and the 10:30 and us coming back together. And I challenge the group at the 8:30. I understand that everybody needs to be sensitive to your level of comfort and. But on the front of the bulletin, I know not everybody reads the bulletin article, right? Shock, shock. But on the front of the bulletin, I gave a challenge, and I'm going to verbalize that as well. And that is, over the next Sunday, but especially over the next couple months, we need to work on our connections with one another. And I'm not saying invade someone's personal space if they're uncomfortable, but I would dare say there are numerous people, especially when we gather in one service next week, that you have not spoken to and really talked to in over a year. And some of these people were close to. And sheer time and communication makes us not be as close as we used to be. And so I want to challenge us as a church body to not just talk to the same people after each service, but to try, because we haven't had fellowship meals, we haven't had activities as much, to try to reach out and talk to people. And even in this service, talk to people that you haven't talked to maybe in 6 months or a year. And let's try to rekindle our fellowship and our love and our relationships with one another. And I think if we can do that, and as we come back together in one service, and if we can look for those that we haven't talked to, then it will help our unity, and it will help our closeness, and it will enrich you and your relationships with one another. So I want to give you that challenge over the next several months, to think about people that you haven't spoken to in a while and go and find them and say, "How are you doing? What's going on with you?" And touch back with those people. I think you'll be blessed by that. This morning, next week, I'll be talking about the value of fellowship, by the way, and thinking about fellowship and the importance of one another. This week I want to think about the value of marriage. The value of marriage. And so as I thought about these lessons and thinking about the soul, thinking about unity, thinking about fellowship and the cross, numerous things that I want to remind us about again. One of the things that I thought of that I really want to emphasize is marriage and the importance of the home. When I think about our ministry here and in the preaching through the years and kind of looking over the sermons and thinking about our, what are some topics that we try to hit regularly, marriage is certainly one of those. And I wanted to remind you of the importance of that and the value of that. And when I think about the past, I realize that marriage is continuing to go down in how it is viewed by our culture. In 1949, almost 80%, 78.8% exactly, of the U.S., every household was married. So 78% of our households in America were married households. We made a significant statement when in the 2019 census, the data was collected, only 48%, less than half of our households are now married family units. The rates of divorce have continued to increase in the last 20 years. Also, the number of single-person households have increased fivefold since 1960. Cohabitation rates, that is, living together, has greatly increased in the past 20 years. And same-sex marriage is now legal. In Hebrews chapter 13, verse number 4, the Bible tells us something that we need to draw our attention to. And that is, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterous. In a culture that is wanting to downgrade how it views marriage, in a culture that where young people are wanting to say, I don't want to get married, I just want to live together, because they fear the commitment of marriage, they don't want to go through the hardship of divorce, so we're just wanting to do away with marriage. In a culture that marriage in general is, by society, is being looked down upon and even changed in what it is. The church, the job of the church is to emphasize the importance of marriage. And if we don't do it, kind of like a lot of these other themes, with souls and with truth and now with marriage, if the church doesn't do the job of emphasizing marriage and the holiness of marriage and holding up marriage as honor amongst all, then who's going to do it? The news media is not going to do it. The government's not going to do it. The school's not going to do it. It's up to the church to do this job. And so I want to remind you of the importance of holding marriage in high esteem. There's four reasons that I think marriage is so valuable. The first thing that it is so valuable is because it is valuable to society. Every society that has ever been studied, the background or the foundation of that society involves marriage. Now, different cultures have different ways of getting married. Different cultures have different ways of recognizing marriage and even the age that people are typically married and things down through the centuries. But every society across the globe has the foundation of the home. In Genesis chapter 2, God would create man and woman, and He would establish the foundation of the home. And in chapter 2, verses 19 and following, out of the ground the Lord God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens. And they brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name. And the man gave names to all livestock and to the birds of the heavens and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper fit for him. Adam could not find anyone that was comparable to him, that was fit for him, that can be his companion. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. And while he slept, he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. He gave her as a gift from God to Adam. And therefore man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. This is the cornerstone of every society, is the home. In Deuteronomy 7, 3 through 4, God forbid his people Israel to marry foreign women. In the book of Ezra, in chapter 10, because they had married so many foreign women, their hearts were being taken away from God, and therefore God told them to come out of those unions. When you think about great King Solomon, Solomon was led away because of his marriages. When you think about our marriages, they influence us probably more than anything else in the choices we make in society. And so when you think about what your society is built upon, if it's not built upon marriage, then what is it built upon? Our influences are is going to often be the wrong things and worldly things. And so when we think about our home, marriage is crucial for society because it gives an order, a structure to society. It provides stability for men and women in life. It gives an the opportunity to meet your sexual desire in a way that is appropriate and keeps a curb upon sexual sin. And it provides a home for children to be raised in. When you think about the value of marriage, I don't think we can properly state it well enough how valuable marriage is to society. And that the more society moves away from it in America, the more harm that will come to our society. Next, I would say, it is very valuable to the church. It's very valuable to the church. Churches need to reach out to all people. And I don't want to be misunderstood. Every soul is valuable to the church. And we shouldn't have just this attitude that we just want to reach families. We ought to want to reach widows. We ought to reach single people, young single people, divorced people. We ought to want to reach every soul. But there is still the case that the church, and this old saying is true, that the church's strength is tied directly to the strength of its families. If you don't have strong families in your church is going to struggle. You need strong families because the leadership of the church is based upon the family. The teaching of the church is based so much upon the family, and so much of the work of the church is based upon that. And so when we think about the value of marriage, it is so valuable to the church. Speaking personally for a moment, you think about your relationship to the church over years. And if you think about what's hurt the church the most, if I could have a wish list and I could say, all right, I could keep Satan from doing this one thing, what's hurt Seven Oaks the most over my 17 years here? I think most people would say this. It is when marriages dissolve. When marriages dissolve, you have two people that were a contribution to the church in their work, in their stability, in their service, and then they divorce. Typically, there's some kind of situation where one of them is involved in sin and there's some kind of problem there. So typically, they'll leave the church. You have a soul that's at stake. Then that other person becomes single. They both become single in that sense. There's all the emotional ramifications of a divorce. There's that instability that then comes of being single. There's often new relationships that are formed from that. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's often harmful to their spiritual life. And then you have the effect upon the children. And the children then go from being at most of the services, from being at the youth group activities and being involved in Bible class, to often being there only every other Sunday at best. The harm that comes to the church because of divorce is inestimable. You cannot estimate how much harm comes because of divorce. And so I say all that to say, when we talk about the value of the church, the value of marriage to the church, it is so valuable when the church ministers to, strengthens, and encourages marriages. And I would say that if you're ever hurting in your marriage, know that the elders, know that this church care about them. They want to help. And if it's helping provide professional counseling, or if it's offering services encouragement or just meeting with the elders or meeting with myself as a minister, meeting with Michael, whatever we can do, we want to care about marriages. We've had marriage classes because the strength of the church is tied to the strength of its families. Now, in Ephesians chapter 5, Paul makes this very point, and he says something that ought to cause all of us to take pause that are married. And he talks about how our relationship in our marriages is a reflection of Christ and the church. He tells the husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church. He goes on and talks about how the wives should submit as the church submits to Christ. And then he talks about how in verse 28, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. For he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it as Christ does the church. And then he says in verse 32, this mystery is profound. And I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. When the world looks and they say, I want to understand how Christ relates to the church, the world looks to marriage. And those of us who are married need to understand that our testimony, our witness, is not just our example, but it is what we live out in our marriages. And that we want to present a strong marriage to the world because that's a witness, that's a testimony of Christ and the church. And so our lives are a reflection of the church and Christ. And so when you think about how people understand more about Christ and how they understand more about the church, they do it from your marriage. And so when you think about the value of marriage, it is so valuable to the church. Number three, it is valuable to children. When you think about marriage, it is certainly so important that God gave it, Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, for the procreation of children. When you start thinking about this topic, you probably thought, well, he's going to talk about how valuable it is for children. But outside of the church, if you read social science research, not dealing with Christians, just dealing with research of families in our culture today, they have discovered, wasn't really a big discovery, but they proved, I should say, that children overall do far better growing up in homes of loving, committed relationships, married relationship. In fact, they have lower rates of drug and alcohol use, lower rates of sexual activity, higher grades, higher self-image, and social skills, and the list goes on and on. All of our school teachers could attest to this fact. I'm not saying that single parents don't have a great challenge and can't do a good job of raising children. What I am saying is that God desired and God decreed that His plan is for a man and a woman as husband and wife to raise their children in a committed, loving relationship. In Malachi chapter 2, God will say this very thing. In verse number 15, did He, God, not make them one and with a portion of the Spirit in their union? And what was the one God seeking? So what was the purpose of marriage? What's the purpose? Well, one of the main purposes of marriage is godly offspring. God wanted us to be able to raise our children, Ephesians 6 verse 4, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. He wanted us to raise our children in a way that could bring them up to know the Lord. And that happens the best in a loving married relationship. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul talks about this same idea in verses 13 and following. And he's talking about should a believing spouse leave an unbelieving spouse. And he says in verse number 14, for the unbelieving husband is made holy because of his wife, and the unbelieving wife is made holy because of her husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean. But as it is, they are holy. Now, he says something really amazing and interesting here. That if one of your spouses in a married relationship is not a Christian, don't just leave that relationship. But rather, he's saying that the Christian in that relationship actually sanctifies or helps make that relationship holy so that the children in that relationship are holy and even the spouse can become holy. Now, we'll talk about that in the next point and how the value to you in the spouse. But notice what he's saying is that the children are impacted because of the marriage union. So he's saying don't dissolve that union even if one of them is not a Christian, but stay in that union, work to make that union all that it can be, and your children are going to be holy because of that union and because of that one Christian who's in it. When you think about the value to children, marriage is so valuable. And that's why we say, as we have emphasized throughout, that the best thing you can do for your children is have and foster a godly relationship, godly married relationship. You know, when you think about this, we've been talking on Wednesday night about parenting and all, and we talked about how in many ways our culture is flipping it upside down and parents have got on the lower end and kids are on the top. And that kids are ruling many households, and it's no longer the father's the head of the household, but often children are the head of the household. And the home runs about what is the desire for children, and everything is about making the kids happy. And we talked about that. And what I would say is that you may be able to give your kids everything. You may be able to provide them financially all the blessings they want so they wear the coolest and latest clothes and shoes. You may be able to provide them all the athletic adventures that they are allowed with all the travel teams and all kinds of things like that. You may be able to provide them with the best education, but what they need the most from you is a godly marriage that is committed to raising them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to bring those children up in the Lord. And so when you invest in your marriage, you're investing in your children. When you strengthen your marriage, you're strengthening and investing in your parenting of your children. The value of marriage is certainly important because it is so valuable to children. The final thing I would say is that it is valuable to you. It's valuable to you. In chapter 7 there, verses 13 through 16, Paul says in verse number 16, "How do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife?" Paul cannot say for sure. It's not a guaranteed deal. You may not win your husband. But he says, how do you know if you will not? In other words, through the marriage relationship, many wives, many husbands will be influenced for Christ and will come to know Christ and will be one to Christ. And so think about how valuable it is for you spiritually. In fact, in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse number 7, after talking in the earlier verses about how a wife can win her husband through her conduct, Peter will say, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. If you don't treat your wife right, if you don't treat your husband right, it affects your spiritual life. Your prayers can be hindered. And so there's great value to you spiritually. Your soul can be won. But there's also great value to you when it comes to the intimacy and the desires that God has created within us. In chapter 7, verse 9 of 1 Corinthians, Paul would say, if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. One of the purposes of marriage, and one of the reasons it's good to get married, is because of the satisfaction of your sexual desires and how God intended that to be met through those means. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 13, verse number 4, our text, he says the marriage should be held in honor and the marriage bed is undefiled and it should not be defiled. For God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterous. And so it is a help against the temptations of the world and the sinful temptations that are out there. And then in Matthew chapter 19, he refers back to Genesis, and he's talking about the companionship here, and how they are no longer two, but one flesh. Not only is it good for you in terms of sexual satisfaction, but it's also good for you in your companionship. One of the best things and one of the reasons that God created marriage is so that you could be friends. You could have someone to grow old with, someone to love, someone to care for, and someone to love and care for you. And that's what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 when he talks about the marriage relationship. And he says that you can nourish, or a spouse nourishes and cherishes one another as Christ does the church. You are nourished, you are cherished, you are prized, you are looked at differently than everybody else in the world. And so it's a good thing to be loved and to love others. And so marriage is so valuable. In a world that is wanting to tell young people, independence is better than commitment. In a world that says, just enjoy your sexual pleasures outside of marriage so you don't have the responsibility. We need to be the church that says, no, life is better doing it God's way. And that marriage provides, yes, challenges and struggles at times, but a committed, loving relationship is God's plan for His home and for our lives. There was a study done back in the 80s talking about commitment and the commitment that we need to have in marriage through our struggles. And it found that 86% of the people who were unhappily married in the late 86% of the people that said they were unhappily married in the late 1980s. And then they did the study later, 5 years later. Those who stayed in the marriage were happier when they were interviewed 5 years later. Indeed, 60% of the formerly unhappily married couples rated their marriage as either very happy or quite happy. So 86% of the people, 5 years later, rated it higher because they stayed in it. They stuck it out. In fact, 60% of them said they were very happy. They were quite happy because they had stuck it out. When you have challenges, that's God's plan. God's plan is we don't just throw it away. We stay committed. We work through it. It's valuable to you. It's valuable to you. And so when we think about the value of marriage and we think about what this church needs to be reminded of and stirring us up, one of the things we need to be reminded of is the importance and the value of marriage. Its value to society. Its value to the church. Its value to our children. And its value to us as individuals. This morning, if you're not a child of God, I invite you to put Christ on in baptism, to rededicate your life if you need to come back to the Lord. If we can help you in any way, please come as together we stand and as we sing.